Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In the wee hours of Wednesday and the first day of the impeachment trial of President Trump, after the impeachment managers from the Democratic House and the president's counsel had ripped into each other, Chief Justice John Roberts roused those in attendance with an admonishment.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the president's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse.
We're talking about the politics of it all today with Ken Rudin, political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Welcome back, Ken.
Good morning, Ann.
Were you up to hear him say that, or did you catch it the next day?
Well, I caught it the next day. I have not. I'll be honest with you. I probably watched everything with the Clinton impeachment trial back in 1999. I have not done the same because part of this is, of course, because of the rules, the way the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell designed these rules, is that both the prosecutors and the defense will have 24 hours based in 3 days each to make their case. So when it runs 8 hours a day, sometimes it's a little bit much. And besides, I have to watch Jeopardy. You know, I have to watch Jeopardy. I have to watch these things. And so I haven't been glued to it, but I have been reading everything and watching all the highlights, certainly.
I read a column by Connie Schultz, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and spouse of Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, and she said she thinks Americans are paying attention to the trial. What do you think?
I don't know. Certainly everybody's talking about it, and certainly it's on the news, and the highlights are on the news. And if anybody who's watched Adam Schiff, the lead House manager who's prosecuting the case in the Senate trial, I mean, he seems to be a master of laying out the case methodically, even just the timeline of what President Trump is accused of doing and all his actions regarding Ukraine and the trying to hold up military aid in exchange for a bogus investigation into Joe Biden's son, Hunter. So, I mean, that's what the case is all about, and how the president has abused his powers. I think that. Everybody I talk to wants to talk about this, whereas for the longest time, they just said we're just tired of this. But they all know at the same time that ultimately this could be for naught, because nobody, including the Democrats, thinks that they're going to have 2/3 of the Senate, which means 20 Republicans, to vote for the conviction of the president of the United States.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. He joins us at least once a month. We have a link to his podcast on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment about politics for Ken Rudin, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@WOSU.org. I listen to a lot more of the House hearings on this topic than I have so far
The trial.
Senate trial, mainly because the Senate trial isn't on during my show and the House hearings was. So my show has been
empty. There are priorities in.
And they heard they might interrupt my show, so they pushed it to the afternoon. But the president is listening to it. He weighed in from Davos, Switzerland, and on Twitter. The Post reported, at least, that as of 10 p.m. last night, he had tweeted 142 times, his own record, apparently. Any indication that he's moving independence or undecided his way? I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, he is, you know, for him to say it's a sham and a bogus trial and a witch hunt and all those things, it sounds like he's just dismissing it. And if you listen to some of the defense team for the president, it also sounds like that they're not really not that they're not prepared, but they're not taking it as seriously as the Democrats are. Mm-hmm. But to hear the president talk about, you know, about this the corruption and the sleaze balls of Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler, who's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. It's vintage Trump, and I think that, you're going to see basically the response from the president's team starting on Saturday, but the president is obviously watching, and he's given so many conflicting stories. He wants John Bolton to testify. He wants Mick Mulvaney to testify, Mike Pompeo. But then when it comes to it, he'll offer executive privilege to keep them from testifying. He said, look, I'd love to have John Bolton, but, you know, a lot of the stuff he knows is national security. He knows how I feel about foreign leaders. I wouldn't want that to be public. Meanwhile, everything he thinks about foreign leaders, the president has been tweeting all along, so I don't know what secrets there are left. But the president says, he was invited to testify before the House impeachment inquiry. He refused, and now he's saying, I just love to sit in the audience and stare at those liars. It's just, it's vintage Trump, but I don't know how much dignity you're supposed to have in an impeachment trial, but I'm sure Andrew Johnson's people and certainly Bill Clinton's people didn't respond like the president is responding today.
One thing he did tweet about the documents that the Democrats have said that they've asked for and have not received, and he tweeted, we've got them, you don't. like he was mocking them. And I thought, wait a minute, this is still in play, the issue of the documents. Is that, I mean, does what he tweet, I know you're not a constitutional lawyer, but...
I am.
Okay. Yeah. So many things. You're all things to all people.
I know.
Are his tweets, do they have are they evidence of anything?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I mean, but you're absolutely right in characterizing what that tweet meant. Basically, it sounded like mocking, like, ha-ha, we have the stuff you have and you're not going to get it. Now, we don't know for sure that the Senate is not going to get these documents or witnesses. The Democrats spent, the House managers spent Tuesday trying to push a resolution offered by Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to have these witnesses and documents subpoenaed before the arguments begin. And all those resolutions were defeated on a straight party line, 53-47. And that's why, you know, we talk about how important the presidency is. Control of the Senate is extremely important. I mean, just ask Merrick Garland, who's not on the Supreme Court because of Mitch McConnell. But having said that, so basically the schedule is, so we have the 24 hours of the Democratic argument, the prosecution arguments, that ends Friday night. Then Saturday, the defense takes over. After the defense has its 24 hours, which will probably be ending like Tuesday, after all that, and then after all the senators ask their questions, then if there's going to be a vote, it'll happen then, which is maybe next, in 2 weekends from now. And if it's going to happen, you're going to need, the Democrats need 4 Republicans to come over and ask for witnesses. Now, Susan Collins, the vulnerable Republican from Maine, has been saying, well, I think we should have witnesses, but I'm not going to buck Mitch McConnell now. We're not going to vote for it now. You need 4 Republicans with a conscience or with the people who feel that these witnesses and documents are needed. But if they can't get 4 Republicans to vote with them, we're not going to hear any of these witnesses. And Trump's tweet will hold firm, saying that we got them and you're not going to see them.
You know, Susan Collins of Maine, Mitt Romney of Utah, there has been suggestions that he might vote for witnesses. But, you know, what can he, it's hard to see anything and know much because we can't see any of the reactions of any of the members.
Well, that's true. Certainly on the Senate floor, I mean, basically the camera you're seeing is run by C-SPAN. They don't pan the crowd. So in other words, if one senator, and there's been accusations that senators have been disappearing from the chamber for hours at a time, but we don't know that because it's focused on, the cameras are focused on the speaker. But, you know, we've heard this for a long time. We always heard, well, maybe Rob Portman, who's a moderate, you know, smart thinking kind of guy, he may come forward. Maybe Cory Gardner of Colorado, who's in a tough fight, maybe he'll do it. But it reminds me of Jeff Flake of Arizona. He's a former senator who left voluntarily last year. And his op-eds all the time are talking about Republicans need to stand up and show backbone. But when he was in the Senate, he didn't show that backbone. So it's one thing to be a courageous senator when you're out of office. Mm-hmm. It's another one to be in the party of Trump and knowing that if you cross the president, your political future may be doomed because the president's power, control over the party and the voters is the strongest I've ever seen it for any president.
Right. The political calculation behind Republicans wanting Hunter Biden to testify, if John Bolton testifies, do you see some kind of deal like that taking place?
It just shows that the Republicans are not taking it as seriously as the Democrats. What would Hunter Biden know about President Trump's conduct?
Right.
I mean, Hunter Biden worked for this energy company in Ukraine. That's true. And of course, it gave the Trump and the Trump administration the excuse to go to the Zelensky government in Ukraine to say, well, what about that corruption investigation and Hunter Biden? But a lot of it, he's never been accused of anything. There's no evidence to suggest that he's done anything wrong. It's just another way of distracting from the seriousness of the whole thing. So Joe Biden himself said, people say, well, Joe Biden was campaigning in Iowa yesterday and somebody suggested, why don't you go testify and you could show those Republicans up? And he said, look, this will make it more of a circus than the Republicans are already trying to do now. I am not testifying and neither will Hunter Biden.
I heard somebody, a talking head yesterday say something about how it would be good for him to go before the Senate and he could appear presidential, blah, 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 that they thought it was a positive.
Well, it might be. But first of all, I've never, you never know what kind of Joe Biden you're going to get. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, when he was being interviewed for The New York Times for the endorsement, he seemed to be very impressive. I have not seen him be especially impressive during the debates, during the 7,000. I've lost count how many debates we've had so far. So you don't know what kind of person you'll get with Joe Biden. But besides, the most important thing is he is besides the point. He has no firsthand knowledge of anything Trump did, about the calls to Zelensky, about any of the things. Basically, I would think that if Joe Biden testified, and he might do a very good job, but at the same time, I suspect the Republicans would try to rough him up because he is one of the leading Democrats. I don't know if he is the leading Democrat, but certainly one of the leading Democrats. Mm-hmm. Hoping to take on Trump in November.
In getting back to your comment that senators are leaving the chamber for sometimes hours at a time. I thought they were supposed to sit there and shut up.
Well, they are supposed to shut up. They're not supposed. I think that all they can drink is water and milk.
I think is weird.
Milk. I'm not sure exactly why. I think I read that Elizabeth Warren was drinking hot water because it was so cold or something. I don't know. But I thought the same thing too, that they were supposed to sit there in solemnity and not say anything. I know there are some senators who've been passing notes to each other, mm-hmm. but some have just gotten up and left for. I mean, not a lot of them, but I thought they're supposed to sit there in silence, but. Like a Mr. Smith goes to Washington when that filibuster lasted forever, mm-hmm. they're supposed to sit there. But you know something, if you're a United States senator and you know how they are, if you get, you cannot get between a senator and a camera because, it's dangerous to your health. The thought of not talking for 24 hours, my mm-hmm. God, I don't know how that's possible in today's Senate.
My guest, Ken Rudin, a political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. He joins us every month. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest is political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Ken, we were talking before we took a break about, what we thought was going to be the rule that senators stay in their seats, all things being equal, and remain silent during the trial. It's not happening, but still, I'm wondering about, and we don't know who's leaving, but I'm wondering about the senators that are running for president and what you think the impact could be on their campaigns while they are, at least at the very least, stuck in the Capitol building.
Well, two things. First of all, I've seen media reports to suggest that far more Republicans are leaving the chamber than Democrats. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've seen media reports. Regarding as far as the senators running for president, the Iowa caucuses are in 11 days. I mean, the timing is just absolutely remarkable. You just can't make this stuff up. So there are four senators. You have Elizabeth Warren, you have Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, and Michael Bennett of Colorado, who's not a factor in the race, but also one of the senators who is running for president or still running. I mean, Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, and others have dropped out, but they are in that chamber for 2 weeks, and it looks like I don't know when they'll have time, except for Sundays when there won't be any testimony. But they'll be off, and it seems like they're leaving Iowa to Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg, who are basically hogging all the attention in Iowa. It must be killing them, especially for those who either seems to be slipping from the polls, like Elizabeth Warren, or desperately needs some kind of a boost to get some kind of delegates, like Amy Klobuchar. Amy Klobuchar, from the beginning, the suggestion has been that if she doesn't do well, and I don't know what doing well really means anymore, but if she doesn't do well in Iowa, she's finished, because that's where her base of support is, coming from nearby Minnesota. So these are crucial days for them, and while they're probably going to be smiling and not making a big deal of it, because impeachment is a serious thing, it's obviously really killing their campaigns.
Not to mention the fundraising thing. I mean, they're usually on the phone a couple hours a day at least, if not...
No cell phone. I mean, obviously, they're not going to raise money on the Senate floor because there are no cell phones.
You can't text for money, but...
Wow. Yeah, like, could you imagine that? You know something not only am I a constitutional scholar, I am also an impeachment scholar, and I read somewhere that nobody texted during the Andrew Johnson impeachment trial in 1868.
And that's a fact.
Somewhere. Yeah, it's a fact.
Let's see. Amy in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Amy.
Hi there. I had a question in the same vein that you two were talking about regarding the responsibility of the senators as jurists. In any normal trial, the jurists would have to be impartial, and the judge would be instructing them, et cetera. And I'm a little confused as to what the senators are required to do and what Chief Justice Roberts' role is as it relates to enforcing any of those rules?
Well, that's a great question, Amy. And the fact is that before the senators were sworn in, basically Chief Justice Roberts had them take an oath that they would be impartial. And they all said, yes, we will be impartial. And we know that, Mitch McConnell even said the exact words that, well, I'm hardly impartial. I mean, I'm basically working for the president, but I'm not going to blame just the Republicans for that. Democrats too. Yeah, I don't think there's any question on how, 95 of the 100 senators are going to vote. I think it's just maybe about three or four Republicans whose votes are going to be very crucial, not for as far as convicting the president. That's not going to happen, but on some minor votes about like hearing witnesses and hearing documents. But Roberts' role is basically ceremonial. He doesn't have the complete control that he would have in a real trial. If you remember, William Rehnquist didn't do that much during the Clinton impeachment trial, which, of course, was much more collegial than this one is. This one is really, the two sides really dislike each other. You can see the venom coming out of some senator's mouth when they're talking about the other side here. So it's unfortunate he did, as we heard in the NPR newscast, we did hear, or maybe Andy, I think you played in the beginning, that Roberts basically chastised both sides, both the House managers and the president's team for just, you know, excessive partisanship and lack of decorum. But that's all that really they do. Roberts, for the most part, has not had to rule on anything significant, and he has not done anything, as far as I know, other than that one scolding.
Amy, thanks a lot for your call. Let's see. Marsh and Columbus, you're on the air. Hello, Marsh.
Yes. Hi there.
Hi.
My question is for Mr. Rudin. When people call their senators to express their opinion about how things should go, whether there should be additional witnesses or additional evidence, does it really carry weight with the senator? Does it really make a difference?
Well, that's the reason I especially like that question, because it seemed to have made a difference on Tuesday when the Senate was haggling over rules, mm-hmm. and Mitch McConnell decided that it's only going to be 2 days, which means for 24 hours, which means 12 hours a day, basically get it wrapped up as quick as possible. There apparently was a lot of phone calls going to Susan Collins's offices and other Republicans saying, this is a sham. You have to have at least a fair trial. And Susan Collins and perhaps some other Republicans went to McConnell and said, look, this is looking really bad for us. And so McConnell did bend a little bit. The fact is, he made it a 3-day effort from both sides to make their case rather than 2 days. And there was some minor, and they also allowed the House impeachment arguments into the record. McConnell had originally said, no, we want a separate vote into that. They said, no, just put it in there, and they did. So McConnell did hear from Republican senators who apparently did hear from their constituents. As far as the ultimate end of the trial, which is guilty or not guilty, I mean, polls are pretty much down the middle. There was a Pew Research poll that came out this week that 51% supports the president's conviction and removal from office, 46% was opposed to his removal. That's pretty much pretty even. So I think all the senators are getting both sides heard. And if this was like, for example, if the Nixon impeachment had gone this far, it never even went to the House, let alone to the Senate. But if the Nixon impeachment thing went to a Senate trial, the calls calling for him to be convicted were overwhelming, I mean, from Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. But in a time like this, when it's 50-50, I don't think senators are moved by anything because I think the American public is split down the middle.
Marsh, thanks a lot for that call. If you have a question or comment for my guest, Ken Rudin, the number is 614-292-8513. What do you make of the politics of who is on the House team?
Well, of course, and that's, you know why that's interesting? Because if you remember the last time there was a Senate trial, which was in 1999, and it was against Bill Clinton, and it was the Republican House, the Republican majority in the House, and it was the House managers were led by Henry Hyde, the former congressman from Illinois, who was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. They were all members of the Judiciary Committee. Here, it's interesting that the lead impeachment manager is Adam Schiff, not Jerry Nadler, who chairs the Judiciary Committee, but Adam Schiff, who chairs the Intelligence Committee. Nancy Pelosi has put a lot of stock, a lot of trust into Adam Schiff's leadership, and I think it's an absolute right choice. I think, first of all, to watch Jerry Nadler, sometimes he can be a little bumbling. Sometimes, of course, his attacks on Republicans as being treacherous and part of a cover-up, I think that was a mistake, and that probably led to Chief Justice Roberts admonishing both sides. Adam Schiff is smart. He's methodical. He lays everything out. He's not a member of the Judiciary Committee, but I think he's the right person to do it. Now, the reason I hesitated from saying the right guys, because for the first time you have two women who are impeachment managers, Zoe Lofgren of California and Val Demings of Florida. So for the first time you're seeing women involved in the impeachment argument as well. You also have Hakeem Jeffries, who's the head of the Democratic caucus in the House, who is African-American. So basically, it's almost like you can make the argument like the House managers calling for impeachment is a microcosm of the country.
Right.
You have whites, you have blacks, you have women. So I think it's an interesting choice. It's a good choice. And they're all prosecutors. So that's the most important thing.
Right.
They know how to prosecute a case.
What about the team that the president's put together? What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I'm less impressed with it because, well, for one reason, they don't seem to be listening to a word that the Democrats are saying. They're basically saying that the Democrats are trying to overturn the 2016 election, that there's no there, that even if the president did what the Democrats are accusing him of, it wasn't a crime. It was not impeachable. Of course, the Democrats' argument is that if this doesn't warrant impeachment, then nothing will. And that's what the argument that Adam Schiff has been trying to set forward. But Jay Sekulow and Cipollone, the leaders of the president's defense, are just basically trying to delegitimize the trial and not really go into specific counter arguments.
What are you looking for going forward in the next few days, Ken, as far as any kind of turning point? Do you see a grand finale to the Democrats' arguments on Saturday?
I think we've heard the best of the Democrats' arguments.
Okay.
I was very, very impressed with Adam Schiff, the way he just, as I said, methodically laid out the case against the president. But if I'm looking for anything, the only thing I'm looking for is even more important than the final vote. If four Republicans will come forward to agree to hear witnesses and get further documents, probably by subpoena. Mitch McConnell, of course, is doing everything he can to keep his Republican majority in line, the 53 members of the Senate majority in line. But if four Republicans do come forward, again, it still won't mean Trump's conviction. You're not going to get 20 Republicans voting to convict him, is what you'd need to have if that were it was going to happen, because you need a two-thirds vote in the Senate. But if four Republicans said, I want to hear more witnesses, I want to see documents, I think that would be fascinating. And ultimately, the audience would not really be the 100 senators, but it would be the voters on November 3rd. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, the crucial vote in this whole impeachment trial.
Let's see, Charles, you're on the air. Welcome, Charles.
Oh, hello, Ann. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, first of all, they should probably call the senators tribunes, because they're not jurors in the traditional sense, and that is a legal jargon word. And the second thing I wanted to say is, because of the gravity of the situation, I'm disappointed in the House impeachment managers at not referring to what it is. The GAO has classified this as a violation of law, in other words, a crime. And when you plan and coordinate around a crime, it is a criminal conspiracy. And to me, they should call it that, so that the gravity of what President Trump has done weighs home for anyone who happens to tune in and listen to it. Mm-hmm. Nixon did not conspire with a foreign government. And the private act of infidelity that Bill Clinton performed obviously didn't impact his official duties. This is his official capacity. This is a criminal conspiracy, and the American people need to hear the gravity of it and not the political PC jargon that you get from the Democratic side and the false equivalency that... Go ahead.
No, I get your point, and I'm sure... Ken Rudin, what do you think about what Charles is saying?
Well, I mean, there are some Democrats who feel that the House impeachment managers and the case itself, the House itself, should have been more aggressive. They should have called him as the president on bribery charges, things like that. I think with the evidence they had to go with, they were probably limited in what they could do. And I don't know if Charles has listened to everything, but I heard a good portion of what Adam Schiff had to say, and he did make the case. He did make the case that it was illegal and it was abuse of power. And ultimately, that's what the impeachment article is about. Ignoring Congress and regarding cover up with Congress, but the abuse of power. So Adam Schiff may not be using the strong words as Charles would like, but I think he's still laying out the case that Trump, what he did was a violation of the Constitution and abuse of his powers. It may not be the strong words, as they say, that some Democrats would like, but I heard a very strong case.
Charles, thanks again for that call. Eric in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Eric.
Hi, good morning, Ann. I just wanted to comment and just kind of get some feedback on. I saw in the Washington Post this week a letter from former Senator Tom Harkin, who was part of the Clinton impeachment trials. And he wrote very clearly that actually the senators are not jurors. They are actually each separate 100 judges in this case because of the fact that they do not just sit quietly. They can make motions and they can ask questions and they can talk to the press or anything afterwards. So he was very clear in that trial and got Judge Rehnquist to make a ruling to make that clear that indeed they're really judges and not jurors. Huh. So can you comment on that?
Well, that's true. I mean, this is not a criminal trial, obviously. An impeachment trial is much different. And of course, the thought of jurors in a regular trial not being able to speak, I mean, of course, that's not the case. And what Eric said talking about Tom Harkin reminded me that the most impassioned defender of the president, President Clinton, back in the 1999 trial, was a former senator, Dale Bumpers, from President Clinton's home state of Arkansas. And Dale Bumpers gave a very impassioned argument that, look, we may be sickened by President Clinton's personal behavior, but this is hardly impeachable. So, you know, it's interesting how they decided to who they decided to use as somebody to defend the president.
Right.
Of course, again, the impeachment of Bill Clinton was far less popular in 1999 than the impeachment of Trump is today, because I think there are far more people who feel that what Trump has done is unconstitutional and a violation of his powers. But you're absolutely right. I mean, these Senate, it's not the same as a criminal trial. In a real criminal trial, the judge would have much more sway over the proceedings. And for the most part, I mean, I don't think Roberts is doing crossword puzzles up on the bench, but he's certainly not running the show as it would be in a regular trial.
Eric, thanks for that call. Ken Rudin is going to stay with us, and we welcome your calls, your questions, your comments, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking politics today with Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Obviously, there's lots to talk about. Historical news. There is a trial, an impeachment trial of President Trump underway in the U.S. Senate right now. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I wanted to turn briefly to some presidential election politics, Ken Rudin, and the debate that occurred last week. Usually that's what we would have been spending a lot of time talking about today. What do you make of this fallout between Senator Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and the issue of whether he did or did not say that a woman couldn't win in 2020? back in 2018.
I am so glad we're talking about this, because first of all, this is what my this week's Political Junkie podcast is mostly about. Mm-hmm. And two, this is a big deal. And it goes beyond Bernie Sanders versus Elizabeth Warren. Basically, the conversation allegedly happened in December of 2018, that Bernie Sanders told Elizabeth Warren that a woman can't defeat President Trump. And now the question is whether the question was it she couldn't beat Trump or she couldn't be elected president. Bernie Sanders says he never said that. Elizabeth Warren says she did say that. That has not gone away, because it's a serious question. If you look at some of the numbers about Elizabeth Warren's candidacy, once she became the ostensible front runner in the race, then everybody was saying, well, she's too much of a radical. She's a woman. We saw what happened to Hillary Clinton, and she can't win. Then her numbers started to fall. And speaking of Hillary Clinton, she, in this new documentary that is about her, she basically said that Bernie Sanders is a loner, is a loser. Nobody likes him. He's unpopular. And when she was asked in an interview by the Hollywood Reporter if she would endorse him for president, she said, it's too soon to make that decision, because what she doesn't like is what Bernie Sanders and his supporters, the Bernie Bros, do on social media, and that is often attacking women in sexist terms. Bernie Sanders has, of course, his campaign was accused of mistreatment of women mm-hmm. in the 2016 campaign. There are a lot of Hillary supporters who still blame Bernie Sanders for her defeat. I mean, that's kind of silly, but one of the reasons she lost, they say, is because Sanders stayed in the race too long and damaged Hillary Clinton. And plus the fact that there are, but it's a fact that if you go on social media, you'll see a lot of tweets ostensibly from Bernie Sanders supporters saying that, you know, Elizabeth Warren is a witch and never Warren. And because she had the temerity to bring that up at the debate, or at least respond to a CNN question at the debate. So that is not only a battle between the two progressive heroes in this race, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, but it goes to the age-old question, and certainly for the past 4 years we've been asking this question, is whether a woman could beat Trump. And we don't know the answer to that. We do know that Trump is going to pull out all the stops and make comments about women as he has for 4 years, 5 years, but it's a really serious question. And it's coming at the worst possible time for the Democratic Party, because they want to show a sign of unity that they could unite and beat Trump, but not if they're beating each other up over this.
You know, a lot of the same kind of things were said about Republicans at about the same time 4 years ago.
Well, you know something, I was thinking of that too. A lot of people, I keep reading that, well, now that Bernie Sanders is now the ostensible front runner, there's a new CNN poll that has him leading Joe Biden mm-hmm. for the first time. Joe Biden has been leading in every national poll since he's been in the race until the CNN poll this week. Of course, there is no national primary, but still the fact that it shows that Bernie Sanders is coming up. The establishment, look, Bernie Sanders has raised more money than any other Democrat. He has the most supporters, the most fervent supporters of any Democrat. At the same time, the Democratic establishment, whatever that means anymore, mm-hmm. they don't trust him. He's not a Democrat, for one. He's an independent. Mm-hmm. And two, they feel that he may be too radical, whatever that word means, to win in November. Will he win in middle America, in the heartland of the country? And so I keep reading that, well, maybe they're going to rally behind other candidates to stop Bernie Sanders, which is exactly what they said about Donald Trump in 2015 right. and 2016, that Trump is really a danger, is going to kill the party. We've got to rally behind somebody else. They couldn't stop Trump. And if Bernie Sanders wins Iowa and New Hampshire, which is certainly possible, the question is, can he be stopped at all? It's very unpredictable, to say the least.
Let's see. Denny and Brian, you're on the air. Denny, welcome.
Yes, thank you for my call. I'm just kind of curious. For some reason, I keep thinking that Hillary might be at the bottom of a lot of this, simply because from day one, he got that he got elected or whatever, got sworn in office, that they've always said impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. Well, like they said, the old saying is a woman scorned, and I just feel that she's at the bottom of a lot of this.
Denny, if you're talking about whether Hillary Clinton is behind the push for impeachment, I don't think that's the case at all. Matter of fact, I think there are quite a few Democrats who, while they admire Hillary Clinton and voted for her very enthusiastically in 2016, I think a lot would like to say that maybe it's time for you to go away. You ran for president twice. You didn't make it. Thank you. Goodbye. If you looked at Nancy Pelosi and her, she was also trying to ward off impeachment until the evidence and the case got so strong that even, you know, hesitating Democrats said it's time to impeach. I don't think Hillary Clinton has that really any kind of sway or power in the party anymore. But I will tell you that the documentary and the interview she had with the Hollywood Reporter made front page news around the country,
right?
Because she still carries a lot of weight. And again, it makes a lot of Democrats roll their eyes and saying, here we go again.
Denny, thanks for that call. I'm wondering, just to follow up on Denny's question, how much, given that a lot of Democrats were talking about impeachment very early on with very little credence at the time, how much damage that's done to their credibility now?
I don't think so. I mean, I just remember there were people like John Conyers and the congressman from Michigan and others who supported the impeachment of Richard Nixon the day after he was sworn in the first term, you know, and everybody said they're rolling their eyes and you know, Peter Rodino and Speaker Tip O'Neill or was it Carl Albert? But they all said, look, that's so premature. It's ridiculous. It'll be thrown out of hand. Even when there are people who wanted to impeach Bush and Cheney over the Iraq war, and Nancy Pelosi back then said, look, this is premature. It's ridiculous. We're not going to even consider this. The fact is that since so many of Trump's alleged crimes have come to light, I don't think those Congress members of Congress who called early for impeachment are suffering at all. As a matter of fact, most of them are in such liberal districts that it probably helps their cause even more.
It might help their cause, but I'm thinking of the cause, you know, on the larger
the party?
Cause. Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I think people won't remember the early calls. They will remember, I mean, if you look at what Adam Schiff is laying out, people may be saying, well, you know, maybe they were right from the beginning. But the fact is, whatever the issues are, now is the time to bring up this issue, mm-hmm. even if it wasn't ready, you know, when they originally wanted it 2 or 3 years ago.
Catherine in Dublin, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, good morning, all. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm hoping you can answer what I think is a procedural question concerning the documents. So everyone's talking around this issue, but I want to know specifically, because this is a trial, it's not a criminal trial, it's not a civil trial, aren't those documents still supposed to be provided to the other side as part of the discovery process? Why does everyone keep chiming in about the senators?
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's not a regular trial. Basically, it's up to the majority party who speaks and what is brought into evidence. That's exactly right. In a regular trial, absolutely, that would be brought into those documents, would not for a second not be brought into the trial. And Adam Schiff has said that if this was a regular trial, this wouldn't be a partisan issue. But it is a partisan issue. And the fact is that the majority party decides what can be brought into the trial. Now, of course, in 1999, the two senators, the Democrats and Republicans, were pretty much on the same page. Of course, it was a Republican House, it was a Republican Senate, and a Democratic president. Here you have a Democratic House who was pushing for impeachment and a Republican Senate who were trying to avoid impeachment, and they're trying to block these documents as much as they can. But the fact is that unlike Clinton, who allow documents brought to the trial, Trump has blocked the release of every document that the Democrats have asked for, executive privilege.
And they haven't gone to the mat over it, though, either.
No, They have it because, Adam Schiff said, if we can't get a subpoena, it'll be rejected, it'll be stalled, we'll go to another court, then it'll come back, and by the time we know it, the election will be over already. Mm-hmm. We want this to be stopped before Donald Trump has a chance to cheat again, in Adam Schiff's words. Mm-hmm. So, again, that vote next week on allowing documents won't happen unless 40 Republicans come forward.
Thanks, Catherine, for the call. Jim in Cleveland, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Ann. Good morning. Good morning, Ken. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show. Just a quick question. I have my little pocket constitution, but I can't find it. I'm interested in Rudy Giuliani's role, and it brings to mind the fact that I thought the president of the United States was the only person that could conduct foreign policy. And it seems to me that what Rudy Giuliani was doing in Ukraine cross that line, and I haven't heard it brought up. I could be wrong. I was wondering what your take on that.
Well, he's represented himself as the president's private lawyer, but I thought the president couldn't do private business. Ken Rudin?
You really thought that the president should not enrich himself and his family with his properies around the world?
I think
there are a lot of things that we thought were not going to happen that have happened. And yes, Rudy Giuliani, as we heard during the impeachment inquiry in the House, has basically been his own. And we heard from the testimony of the people who did come before the House to talk, that Rudy Giuliani conducted his own, or at least the president and Rudy Giuliani conducted their own foreign policy, trying to, meeting with Zelensky, getting Rudy Giuliani's pal Parnas to do all the dirty work. Again, his name has not come up in the Senate trial so much, but it certainly was part of the House trial. And I'm sure that no matter what happens in the Senate, Rudy Giuliani's actions are not going to be ignored, at least by the House, because there's no reason why the House should stop their investigations, even if impeachment is off the table.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate that call. You know, if they do take witnesses, that could propel the trial beyond the February 7th debate set for New Hampshire, right? The next Democratic presidential debate.
Oh, not only that, it'll supplant the State of the Union message on February 4th.
Yeah. What happens then? What do you think should happen if Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are stuck at work?
I suspect that these debates are not set in stone in that way. And I think the Democratic Party, for all the criticism they've been getting, they know that if half the Democratic field, the debate participants are stuck in this trial in Washington, they would postpone or delay the debate. I'm convinced of that.
Any thoughts about Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg getting into the, you know, and their role as the resident billionaires in this race at this point?
Less so about Steyer, but I'm fascinated about Michael Bloomberg because, I mean, I live in Maryland and I guess the Virginia is part of the March 3rd Super Tuesday states, which is what Michael Bloomberg is going to be taking part in. His commercials are everywhere. I cannot turn on anything on television without seeing a Bloomberg commercial. I happen to think his commercials are very effective. I think they're probably the best commercials I've seen. He's already spent $240 million.
Jeez.
Even though he's not involved in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, or Nevada, but he's going to start on Super Tuesday. And his commercials are omnipresent. They're everywhere, and they're effective. I don't know what that means. He is creeping up in the polls. Of course, he can't be in the debate because to be in the debate, you need individual donors, and he's not taking money from other people.
Right.
He's self-funding. I don't know if the Democratic Party wants somebody who could self-fund. I don't know if they feel a 77-year-old short billionaire is the answer to a 72-year-old tall billionaire. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but it's a wild card. And if anything, if Bloomberg is effective, the only thing he could do, perhaps, is hurt Joe Biden, because I think they come from the same constituency in the Democratic Party, more of a centrist liberal as opposed to a more progressive liberal like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Fascinating stuff, and we don't know the answer to it.
Ken Rudin, I can't wait to talk with you again. Thanks so much for your time today.
Okay, thank you. It's always great to be on your show.
Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks for all your great calls. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.